This is still November 25, 1996. We are still in Rabbi Jacob's study, and this is tape 8. Yes, this is tape 8. Rabbi Jacob, let's talk about Horizon Home. Do you want to give it us its history and where it is now?
Sure. As you
explain what it is.
Okay.
Please.
As you know, Irene and I had a child, Claire, who was severely retarded and also had cerebral palsy. So after discovering that, we did our best to get good help and good education for her. At first, at the D.T. Watson home, which is in Sewickley, so from age probably 3, something like that, she spent 5 days a week there and the weekends at home. And Irene also went out once a week to work with her. So that was a lot of driving also for the other kids as they came along, and meant a fair amount of juggling on the weekends because it was an hour's drive out and an hour's drive back every Friday and every Sunday. Sometimes if I had a late funeral on Friday, I would tell the Sugars or Hearst that okay, but they would have to go to the cemetery and then go to Sewickley, and Poopsie would ride back in a limousine under those circumstances. And of course, we on the weekends did our best to spend as much time with her as possible and bring her around. I brought her around to religious school because I felt that that was useful. And not only for her, but also to show kids that you could have handicaps and still be okay. And also took her on some visits. Some people you could, you know, make a call on, and they wouldn't mind somebody crawling around, which gave me an insight then into people's housekeeping, because I could see from her white stockings when they were cleaning their floors or not. After a while, the D.T. Watson home told us that they could no longer care for her and that we needed to find an appropriate setting. So we started to look and found and traveled around western Pennsylvania and then even the eastern part of the state and found that there really was no place even vaguely appropriate. The state schools were vastly overcrowded. It really meant you were put in a bed and tied down. The private places were poorly run, and when we came to look at them and had usually informed them that we were coming, we found them in dreadful shape. So we decided that the only road to take it was to try to establish a group home here in Pittsburgh, which would care for her and care for other people. Undoubtedly, the need was much broader than a single person. So we started to look into this. And people were very helpful right from the very beginning. For example, Murray Levine, who helped organize a trip to Connecticut, which was the leading state at that point in care for a variety of handicaps, and had a very good set of group homes. So we booked space for about 15 people, got like-minded people together, and went up there and had a look, and then found how far behind Pennsylvania was, because we had no group homes whatsoever. The next step was to organize, to incorporate, we did. And then a small group of us, Helen Shamowitz was very much part of that, as was one other woman, whose name escapes me at the moment, and of course Irene. We had a larger board, but in essence the four of us really started to put a group home together. We had a pretty good idea of what we wanted, but the state really wasn't at that point willing to move in that direction either. So in order to make this thing work, we had to have some support from Harrisburg. And I went up there a couple of times and met with the state legislators and found myself in the strange position of being on opposite sides with the state administrator for retarded and mentally handicapped individuals.
What year was
this? This was probably 68, something like that. 68, 69, and more or less fighting with him, which it was perfectly possible for me because I was outside the system. You know, there wasn't anything to do to harm me, so to speak. Well, we moved ahead and decided, and the state slowly moved ahead in at least thinking about this and beginning to make this possible. Yes?
I think it's important that you give a tiny...
Well, they objected to the concept of a group home entirely, to things in the community, felt that the big institutions were fine. When you told them they were far from fine and started citing the conditions, the people weren't particularly happy, to put it mildly.
Well, that's why I was going to say. Okay.
So we decided to move ahead and organize. Basically, the four of us and a slightly larger body that met occasionally. And it was a matter of, first of all, getting people on board as far as a real board was concerned, and then getting enough recognition in the community. So there was an advisory board, and I simply wandered around and collected an impressive list of individuals, the bishop, various other religious leaders, educational leaders. People were willing to be involved, especially if it didn't mean additional meetings, and I can well understand that. Then the next matter was to find a site, and we found a site on North Negley. Beautiful house, large, really far more elegant than we needed, but too large to be sold to anybody as an individual home. Even had a sort of an elevator in it. And now the next step was to find the money for this, which, of course, was not exactly easy. So this was my first venture at fundraising. I saw the man at the Pittsburgh Foundation, and he sort of took me aside and said, you know, you've got to write proposals and the like. So I started writing proposals, went to visit all the major foundations. They were all very nice. I had lunch with the people at the Mellon Foundation in the course of a 2.5 year period, maybe a half a dozen times, but the niceness did not result in funding because they weren't sure this thing was going to fly, and most foundations are very conservative. You know, they'll give you money if they're sure of success, but if it's doubtful, they'll sit on the fence for a while. So individuals were easier, and we eventually got a fair amount of money from individuals. The other source, of course, was the government. And so one of the things I spent a lot of time on, I guess it was one summer, was getting a government proposal together. which required all kinds of data, and ended up as a 3-inch thick piece of work, some of it, and then 10 copies of this had to, I remember delivering this thing, it was up to my chin as I carried the copies in. And I also remember that there was some data that simply wasn't available, census data. And I looked high and low for it, and after a while decided if I couldn't find it, they couldn't find it either, and I made it up.
Become creative, don't you?
Well, I mean, what else can you do?
I'm sure you're not the only one who ever did.
So in the end, after about 2 years of organizing and fundraising, we were close enough that we could think about, and or actually, as we were doing this, we also decided to try to get the zoning changed on the house, because group homes were not welcome in neighborhoods. And although we assured people that we would run this properly and that it would be professional and that there wouldn't be any noise and that these kids were not a bunch of wild kids who were going to tear up the neighborhood, but unfortunately they were hardly mobile, it was not welcome. So we went to the zoning people, and of course that also meant not only getting the material together appropriately, but also politicking appropriately. So at the zoning hearing, I had talked to enough congregants to come who were at least vaguely in that neighborhood that the place was packed with supporters, and the other side had not done its homework quite as well. But the zoning board, you know, it listens and then it makes its decision subsequently. I've forgotten how the first decision went, but there was a second set of hearings, and all this takes a long, long time. And eventually the decision went against us. So we decided to appeal to the city council, which has the last word on this. By this time, of course, the neighborhood was, some of the neighbors were up in arms, others were supportive, others were unwilling to get out and support us because they had to live in that neighborhood. We saw everybody, I mean, we, that means Helen Shamowitz, Irene, or I, saw everybody in the neighborhood, organized meetings with the people in the neighborhood to try to explain what we wanted to do, went to the broader neighborhood, tried to get them involved as well in the East End. This is on North Negley, not North Negley, on Highland, North Highland Avenue. No, it is North Negley, it's 1212 North Negley, sorry. In the Highland Park area. By this time, the whole thing had gotten complex enough, and we were also thinking now of staffing and selection of the children as well as personnel, that we needed to engage someone, and we had the money to do that. I forgot.
$100,000.
Probably a bit more than that. By the time we had about $150,000 or $170,000, the foundations began to show an interest.
That's how they
do. You have power.
Well,
fundraising ability.
Yeah, but now that we had the money, we really didn't need them anymore.
So is the way United Fund was involved?
No. So now we engaged a director, and his name will come to me. I don't remember it offhand. And we got a lot of good publicity on the way from the newspapers and so on, who were generally supportive. And he was housed here for a year. All that we paid for was his phone line. And so downstairs was Horizon Home, upstairs. we had an easy time talking to each other. But the zoning battle continued. And it was a matter of convincing city council. So eventually the four of us got 600 people to write letters to each councilman and to really swamp them with mail and with phone call and as many other outside influences possible, show them that this was the direction in which other states were going. It was necessary for us to do this. Once we canceled, Irene and I canceled our vacation because we wanted to be around when this hearing took place. And it was rescheduled, then we finally decided on a vacation, which in that instance took us to Japan. And then they scheduled the hearing anyway. We decided we'd go on to Japan. And so we heard in Japan that finally we were victorious. And so coming back, it was now a matter of actually setting the place up, which was also not exactly easy because it required a lot of architectural changes. Some of the things that were in that home had to go because of the nature of the personnel. For example, they had an elevator of sorts, but it was almost open on all sides. So that had to go out. They had wonderful showers, you know, sort of luxurious showers, which you are sprayed from the side as well as from the top. Those had to go because they might be dangerous. The doors had to be changed so they're wide enough for wheelchairs. Had to put in a different elevator. And lots and lots of other changes, equipment changes in the kitchen and the like. In the meantime, somewhere along the line, we discovered that a restaurant in the East End had gone broke. And somebody told us that we might be able to get the equipment. So we found out who was involved, and they told us, yes, they really needed to get all the stuff out, and we could have anything we wanted from there. So the four of us, plus a few other people, went over, took the place apart, got all the tables and chairs, the stove, the refrigerators, the pie refrigerator, found one of our handymen here who had a truck, and then rented two trucks and took all this equipment out and then had to find a place for it. And one of our real estate people, Ken Goldsmith, lent us a couple of stores in Homestead. When I asked him, when I picked up the keys and asked him how long I could use them, he said, forever. And when we pulled up there with our three trucks, the whole neighborhood was excited because they thought somebody was actually going to go in there. But all we did was store the stuff, and somewhere over there is still a pie refrigerator, which we've never been able to use. Because it's an enormous thing. And so we moved all this stuff into Horizon Homes at the appropriate time and then approached people for donations of furniture and other equipment, and people were extremely generous. You know, Marty Faberman, for example, just to name one person, and lots of others. And then it was a matter of actually working on the building itself, and we had limited funds, so some of us did the painting and the stripping of wood and, you know, those kinds of things.
How did you licensing?
Well, when it was all finished, then we needed licensing and we needed inspection, and that was done, and I remember our director, and I still can't think of his name, telling us that the last step, you know, you had to have the electrical work and everything else inspected or so on, with the building inspector, came as follows. He wandered through the building, he noticed this and that, and he just didn't seem all that pleased with everything. And then on the second floor, he noticed a carpet and said, "This is a very nice carpet." And so our director said to him, "You know, this is something we don't need. We're not going to use it. Are you interested in this by any chance?" And after that, the inspection went very smoothly.
Called by bribery.
Oh, no, this wasn't bribery. This was...
Who then, how did you decide how many children you would first pay?
Well, we knew how many children we could accommodate. And I think it was 12 plus two respite beds, because we made up our mind from the beginning that we would always offer those beds to individuals who took care of children at home. And because that's the only thing that makes it possible, that if you need to go out of town because of a family emergency or you want a vacation, you have some place to leave a child. We said from the beginning that this was going to be a non-denominational venture, so this was not a Jewish venture. And to the best of my knowledge, Poopsie Claire was the only Jewish child who was there, certainly at the beginning. I don't know about later. And we also made up our mind right from the beginning that we would do our best to see to it that parents were involved. Now it was a matter of first making sure the building was really usable, appropriate, and had the necessary licensing. Then we had to go to the government, because this is going to be largely government financed. And the state and the county were agreeable. We still had a $300,000 grant from the federal government, which Congressman Moorhead had been quite instrumental in getting. So, but there were some problems, because the requirements, the state and the federal requirements, didn't mesh, even on such simple things as measurements for doors.
Oh, my word.
So I remember one day when our director, a couple of high-priced people from Philadelphia and Washington, and others from Harrisburg, and I met for the whole day to see if we couldn't work this out. Well, in the end, we couldn't. So we were never able to use that $300,000 grant. But that's, I mean, we had to make up our mind at that point. You go federal or state, and of course the state funding was going to be continuous, so we needed to take that route. And then we proceeded to select our first group of children.
And the application,
I don't think it worked in that way. As I remember it, the man's name who was our director was Ron Williams. Was that he selected children from various institutions which we knew were looking to place children, and so didn't put anybody through that. You know, he was the only group home in the city, and you could be inundated, and how were you going to do that? It was done in that fashion, and we also got some very nice publicity rather early. We were on the front cover of the QED magazine, and the neighbors rather quickly adapted, became quite welcoming, because it didn't disrupt, and we were careful about outside maintenance. Well, you know, Irene and I were over there quite often raking weeds and straightening out bushes, making sure that it looked okay. so things worked out very well right from the beginning, and it was a very, the setting was home-like, intimate, and that meant that the people who worked there at the beginning also felt very close to the children, and some of them really remained in contact for many, many years after they left.
How much staff ratio?
Well, because the staff is 24 hours, 7 days a week. Now, again, I have forgotten exactly what the number was.
Did the staff live there?
Some staff lived there, yes. There was staff on each floor that lived there. Somebody had to be there in attendance all the time. And the programming initially was all internal. And then, after a while, we were able to take the kids elsewhere. A group that was very helpful was the Rotary Club of East Liberty. Provided us with a van rather early and lots of ancillary equipment, things for the kids to work with or to play with, as were other groups. Lots and lots of other groups got involved, too. And the board, after this was a going concern, I guess I stayed on for a good while, but after about 10 years or so, 8 or 10 years, I left and others took over, and Horizon Homes has vastly expanded since then.
You say homes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we immediately incorporated with that in mind, but initially weren't able to do that. But now there are 8 altogether. The central administration is still at the North Negley site in what used to be an enormous garage. Probably a five-car, two-story garage, which we've completely rebuilt into administrative buildings. And of course, as you grew, the administrative headaches grew. For example, I still remember the first time that somebody who was involved with the kids was involved with smoking marijuana. And he told us, you never said anything about not smoking marijuana. So at that point, we had to draw up a complete set of guidelines for everything under the sun, which every employee had to initial. And then once we had a problem with somebody who claimed discrimination, so we when you fired somebody, you had to carefully document every step along the way, the warnings, so on. And in a set of homes like this, the turnover of personnel is a real problem, because people get burned out and they're paid very poorly. So you depend on these individuals, but you really don't treat them the way they
should. Walter, where did you get the criteria for the whole thing? Did your director automatically have all the expertise?
No.
Where did you get your whole...
We really got our criteria from studying group homes, primarily in Connecticut, but then elsewhere too. So before the director came on board, and he didn't have any experience in this either, we had a pretty good idea what we wanted, what the ratios were to be. One of the other things that we did right from the beginning is run a summer camp. And this was not run on site, because it didn't have any room on site, but run at Duquesne University, so that individuals, again, who families who kept individuals at home would have a place to leave them for a couple of weeks in the summer.
As a residential? You used
this was
residential facility.
Yes, we used a dormitory of Duquesne. That limited us to some degree, because obviously, autistic kids or kids whom you couldn't, had no idea what was going to happen to them, you couldn't put in a dormitory. But it meant that those families could get away for a bit. And this worked very well.
For the record, you were president from 1967 to 1975.
Okay.
Now, what were the age range of the children? Did you have criteria?
Yes, the age range at first was really children. So we took them from about 4 years to, I guess the oldest was about 12, 13, something like that.
As it grew,
we have decided, well, that was one of the reasons for growth. there was no place to go as a teenager or as an adult. And so we decided we would offer the whole range. and the other factor in that was that we decided that we would not limit ourselves to, we would never say to a parent,